Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
One of our favorite spots every week is when we visit with this guy from VaultQuest.com, the one and only Brent Hubbs. What's going on this morning?
Oh, not much, guys. How are y'all?
We're doing fine. Number one Tennessee plays South Carolina tonight. By the way, we'll have the game tip off at 5:30 here on the Zone. But Brent, this seems like an interesting spot, and it's good where you have a veteran team in a spot like this, where you play a game with a huge game coming up next against Kentucky on Saturday. You pulled away and blew out South Carolina on the road just a couple weeks ago. You know, a lot of different factors. This seems like it could be a tough spot against a team that can grind you down at times.
Well, no question. I mean, you know, the proverbial trap game, if you will, and I think everybody got a lesson in college basketball last night that anybody on any particular day can do a variety of things. You look at Michigan losing on the road against Penn State. Kentucky cannot close out LSU at home, in front of the Tennessee game on Saturday. And then I think we're all doing better than the Louisville fans are this morning after that
yes.
meltdown last wow. night. So, it's a crazy game. You got to be ready to play. It's hard to play at your best. And at your peak emotional level every night, this is a big week for this team. We'll see if their maturity comes through tonight. You know, you would expect it to. This is a South Carolina team that can get physical with you at times. They do like to slow the game down. They'll grind it out a little bit. I think one of the advantages for Tennessee in this game is it's not just that Rick Barnes has a lot of respect for Frank Martin. You hear Admiral Schofield talk. You hear Grant Williams talk. They respect the way South Carolina plays and the way Frank Martin goes about business. Now, Frank Martin's in Knoxville today telling his front line they weren't man enough to play against Tennessee's front line 2 weeks ago. Do they answer that call tonight besides Silva? Silva was good, but outside of Silva, does the front line for South Carolina answer Coach Martin's call tonight?
Isn't it interesting what expectations have become for this team, too? It's like if they don't play the perfect game or beat everybody by 25 or 30 points, it's almost like they didn't, it's a failure or they didn't play well. I mean, you just can't hammer every single conference team like people want you to, you know?
No, you can't. And I think two things happen. One, Tennessee fans haven't been in this position with their basketball team. Basketball is a different mentality than football. And what I mean by that is you play so many games, and if you lose one, it's not the end of the world. Whereas in football, obviously, if you lose one and you don't play at your emotional best 12 times, then that's a much bigger issue. So I think that's part of everything there. And I think the other thing, too, is, and look, I'm to blame for this as much as anybody, and I actually wrote about this last week. You know, fans should enjoy the ride. It's hard to enjoy sometimes when you focus on the question of, where's this team's weakness? What are their concerns? And suddenly you find yourself and you're talking about, well, they got to rebound the basketball. They're giving up too many offensive rebounds. And it's kind of like that guy going into the NFL draft who's the projected number one pick. He's not just the number one pick. He's the guy that they pick every scab off of. You know
right.
what I mean? He's got an elbow problem. He's got a wrist problem. His pinky finger is not wide enough or long enough or this, that, or the other. And I think you get into a little bit of that with a basketball team that's on the kind of streak that this team is on right now.
Give me a health update, Eves Pons and also Jordan Bone.
Bone will be fine. The ankle was a little bit sore, but he's gotten plenty of treatment on it. He'll be good to go. Eves Pons will look like Phantom of the Opera tonight when he puts the mask on and goes out there. But, I think for Eves, does the mask bother you? How quickly can you get comfortable with playing with a mask? For some guys, it's not a big deal. For other guys, it's a real problem. This is a mask that doesn't come down below the nose, and it's more on the upper part of his face and the side of his face. So we'll see. He got the mask yesterday, practiced with it yesterday. Going to go through shoot around with it today, and then we'll see where he's at. I expect him to get several minutes tonight. I think he'll get all of Jalen Johnson's minutes, and hopefully he can get comfortable with that mask because Tennessee's going to need his physical presence in Rupp Arena on Saturday night for sure.
From VaultQuest.com, our guest is Brent Hubbs.
Yes, Brent, I saw that The Missouri head coach was talking about the TP, I guess, the portal, as well as, now that they're, have a bowl ban and sanctions, that their, seniors are available, and that Tennessee was one of the main schools interested in their players, man. How does this process work where Tennessee can talk to their players? Can they, the players call them? Can they call the players? How does this all work, even if it was just not Tennessee, any other school?
Well, when news came down that Missouri had been granted a bowl ban and that players were eligible for transfer, every school in the country grabbed a Missouri roster and a highlighter and marked names by positions of need for them, also looked at hometowns and high schools and any particular tie they might have to somebody to be a possibility. And as much as you would like the world to be that the kids contact the individual schools and say, hey, I think I'm interested in leaving, and with everything going on here, that's not, I want to look at leaving. That's not how it works. I mean, those guys are, basically free. The NCAA has basically declared them free agents is what they've done. So, everybody's, contacting a high school coach. Hey, can you give me an updated number on this guy? Can we, try to talk to him? I'll send him a message. Time to call me because I have interest in him, because the kids aren't sitting around going, okay, here's a list of 10 schools I might like. Let me call them and see if they're interested in me. You know, they're sitting around waiting on the schools to call them. And certainly with the resources you have and the amount of personnel that you have, everybody's scoured those rosters and that roster and have made phone calls. It's not just Tennessee. And I get Barry Odom's frustration. I do. I mean, do I think Tennessee's probably looked at that roster really hard and reached out to some people? Sure. I think some other schools have as well. Barry Odom's frustration is they're in an appeal process right now. They're trying to get that bowl ban lifted, and appeal the NCAA out of that. He feels like everybody's trying to come after his players before that situation's 100% resolved. So I get the frustration, but when the NCAA declares free agency on a group, everybody's going to come calling.
Brent, what about the coaching move that Pruitt made? Terry Fair, of course, essentially leaving after being taken off the field, and Derek Ainsley coming in and being paid seven figures.
Well, Derek Ainsley and Jeremy Pruitt are close friends. They know each other well. They've worked with each other a lot. They know this defensive system. Ainsley was a young coach who really grew after he left Knoxville here and went on to Alabama and really grew in his role down there. Jeremy Pruitt was a part of that growth process with him and helping him along. And so I think there's a real comfort level there. I think with Terry Fair, that was one where, that was a quick hire that was made when Pruitt got the job. He didn't know Terry Fair very well. I don't think he dislikes Terry Fair at all. I just don't think it was, somebody he was going to give the back end of the defense to. And if Derek Ainsley was interested in getting back into college football, Jeremy Pruitt was going to jump all over that. He offered Terry an off the field role. Terry didn't want it. And so they bring in Derek Ainsley, who is an upgrade in terms of fit into this defense, an upgrade in terms of experience in this conference, experience overall, and is a guy who can go out and recruit as well. So, this is a guy who is a more advanced football coach than Terry Fair was, and there's no Tennessee fan out there can say that Tennessee's on the cheap, because this staff, Philip Fulmer's not on the cheap when it comes to paying football coaches, because Tennessee's payroll in football is at a level that none of us really ever, who's covered this program for a long time, ever really imagined it being.
From BallQuest.com, our guest is Brent Hubbs. More with Brent coming up in a moment. This is 104.5 The Zone. Hang around. Welcome back, 104.5 The Zone, 8:34 with the Wake Up Zone. Our favorite segments every week, we visit with our friend Brent Hubbs from BallQuest.com.
Hey, Brent, we were talking about Derek Ainsley, the new DB coach. Is he just the DB coach? Is he the OC? Because I'm trying to figure out how he's justifying the pay. Or is he going to be calling plays or something?
Well, Jeremy Pruitt's going to call the plays.
Okay.
He's not going to give that. He's not going to surrender that those play calling duties at this point in his head coaching career, I don't believe. But Derek Ainsley is going to have some kind of co-defensive coordinator title, defensive coordinator title. There will be a title there that will be a part of why that salary is where it's at.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if it was other competitors out there, and that kind of boosts up the salary, or was it just his title as
well? Well, I mean, he was reportedly, of course, the NFL salaries for assistant coaches are not revealed, but he was reportedly one of the highest, if not the highest paid secondary coach in the NFL.
Wow.
So you weren't getting him for $450. They were going to have to pay more money, and obviously to justify paying that money, you know, in this day and age, you give everybody a title. So he'll be, you know, a co-defensive coordinator or the defensive coordinator, and he'll be an associate head coach or an assistant head coach or, you know, defensive head coach. There'll be some variety of titles given to him to justify that pay salary.
Man, I'll have to figure out how to do that for the station so I can have all these cold deals, and then that way it can boost me up there with Mark's salary. So I see how I can do that. I guess lastly for me, though, who's the sleeper recruit that a lot of people aren't talking about? Once he gets on the football field, you're going to start saying, this guy's pretty good. Nobody's talking about him.
In terms of guys who signed, an intriguing prospect to me is the guy by the name of Roman Harrison. I think it's going to be interesting to see where Roman's body goes. Does he become a defensive end that's like a Kyle Phillips style of player? Does he become an even bigger defensive end? Does he stay at outside linebacker? Where does he ultimately end up playing size-wise? I think it's going to be intriguing. But this is a guy that Tennessee had in their camp. They found him in camp. They really liked him. His stock has gone up throughout his senior year. He was on a football team that dealt with some injuries in the regular season. They were a little over 500, barely made the playoffs in the Georgia state playoff system and the division that they play in, and then they got on a run, and led by him, went on to win the state title. He blocked, I think, two field goals in the state championship run, including one in a state title game that preserved the win. He had a bunch of tackles. Just an athletic football player whose best football is in front of him. I think that's a guy nobody talked about in this class who's going to end up helping Tennessee on special teams as a freshman, and I think we'll end up helping this defense somewhere along the way.
Brent, there were a few rumors, about Jay Graham maybe joining the staff. Any fire to that smoke?
Well, I mean, the fire would rage on. It would become a full-blown blazing fury if Jeremy Pruitt ends up with an offensive opening of some kind. Now, at this point in time, he's full on the staff, but does he move an offensive staff member off the field? Does an offensive staff member leave? If there's a opportunity to bring an on-the-field offensive coach to this program, I think the hot board would probably be a hot board of one, and that would be Jay Graham, unless it was, the offensive line job came open, which nobody expects that to happen. But if there was some movement that created an offensive opening, I think Jay Graham would be the first place that Jeremy Pruitt goes. Of course, Graham was through Knoxville last weekend, went up to Johnson City and saw Randy Sanders. He spent some time with T. Martin. He knows Jeremy Pruitt well. They worked together at Florida State. So there's a lot of logic there in Jay Graham's name surfacing around. But before anything gets real, I think the first question is, how would a position be created for him in an on-the-field role with this staff full right now?
What about who's going to oversee special teams?
I think Kevin Scher will do that. Now, what's going to be interesting is, Kentucky's looking for a defensive coordinator because he ended up, they ended up creating an opening happened there because their coordinator left for the NFL. Todd Grantham at Florida is one of the top candidates for the Bengals defensive coordinator job if he wants to get into the NFL. So you could have two defensive coordinator positions open in the SEC East, in the coming days. You got one open right now. Does Kevin Scher get involved in either one of those jobs? Not sure he wants to, but would they be interested in Kevin Scher? Again, Kevin Scher's, co-defensive coordinator here now. He's not calling plays. They've just brought Derek Ansley in. But if Scher is on this staff, I think Kevin Scher will be Tennessee's special teams coordinator moving forward. Now, if Jay Graham were to come on board in some way, he has a lot of special teams experience and was a special teams coordinator at Texas A&M. So, that would be interesting to see how they would delegate all that stuff up.
What about immediate eligibility for transfers, Aubrey Solomon and D'Angelo Gibbs?
Well, I think when you look at the trend at the NCAA, I think that you believe there's a shot. There's a legitimate shot with both, probably a more realistic shot with Solomon than there is D'Angelo Gibbs. But, in this day and age, we're seeing guys getting eligible immediately across the board. at a rate we've never seen before. I think the NCAA is fearful of being sued. I think that there's, you know, appeals being written that are convincing to the NCAA, and, you know, Justin Fields obviously won his appeal. So there's no question that Tennessee's going to appeal for both of them. I don't know that they'll get both eligible. I would not be surprised if, from what I'm told, that Solomon's more likely to get eligible, because it seems like he has a more a better case, if you will, in his appeal than maybe D'Angelo Gibbs has. But it's all about how you write the appeal, and it's all about how nervous the NCAA is about getting sued if they turn the appeal down. Most kids these days are winning them, not losing them, which is something 10 years ago we didn't see.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it was like the NCAA record in court was like the Globetrotters. Other thing, by the way,
they're quickly becoming the Generals.
They really are, in more ways than one.
They don't win anything.
Exactly. Mark Emmert is red clots. But anyway, the great thing about VolQuest, by the way, it's content, not only written, but also the video and the podcast. And Brent, something that came up with you and your guys was the way that Jeremy Pruitt is promoting the program from within, more videos, a little more transparency. You know, what have you seen in the off season? And obviously it's a little bit different now, but what have you seen in contrast to year one?
Well, I think you're seeing a guy that he's not comfortable with promoting himself, you know, and he's not real interested in going out and barnstorming and that type of thing. But I do think he has relented on some things and allowed a little more access internally, and as a result that they have produced more videos. I don't want to call them hype videos, but I guess it's a little bit of hype video. They're doing a little bit more graphic stuff than they've done. I think that's in part because he's been here for a year and gotten to know everybody internally, and has trust with those guys that, you know, they're not going to tweet out something dumb and they're not going to post something, you know, dumb that way. And I think the other thing too is he's more comfortable with the roster and with this being his team, and he understands kind of who he has, you know, on this roster now, and what he has to work with. So, you know, I think that's part of the evolution of a coach. I mean, again, they're not coming in to do an all-access Hard Knocks anytime soon on Tennessee football, but he has trying to continue to keep some momentum, to generate some momentum in recruiting and keep it there. There has been a little more access, videos, highlights, that type of thing put out than what we've seen in his first year on you know, at Tennessee.
Brent Hubbs probably has a confetti bucket to throw on somebody, so we'll let him go from VolQuest.com. Thanks as always, Brent. Have a great day, man.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.